last 8 years. Let's see. All right, let's try this again. All right, well, maybe we'll make this work one way or the other. Anyway, so since there's not going to be a program tomorrow night, this winds up being Thorn in the Front Porch Thursday, Thursday on the Front Thorn, something. Yeah, we'll combine both the Thursday theme and the Friday theme together for this evening. I thought just because a giggle is always good to have. I thought you might appreciate something I saw earlier today. Granted, it's a visual, but you don't really need the visual. All you need is the real live, honest to God words of this particular teabagger. His name is Joe Barton, and he really is a member of Congress, and he really does sit on the Science Committee in the House of Representatives. And I was so stunned when I saw this today that maybe stunned's not the right word. I thought I got a screen cap of it. It was a real beauty. Let me check. Okay, this is good. It's all straightened up. Dr. John tells me I was getting an error through TuneIn, but we're all good now. So, hallelujah. Man, isn't this a dynamic 8th anniversary? We'll get there. We'll get there. There it is. Yeah, this guy is a real live member of the Science Committee on the in the House of Representatives. He is Joe Barton, teabagging Congress thing from Texas. And you know, we spend a good bit of time talking about the future of sustainable renewable energy here, because it really does mean a lot to us here in Appalachia, considering that we're 5.5 million pounds of high explosives a day in our communities, that kind of thing. So you could have knocked me over with a feather this morning when I saw a quote from Joe Barton, and I'm going to read it. This is exactly what, and I double checked. I wrote back on Facebook, is this really real? Because I don't like getting onioned. And so, yeah, Joe Barton has said, it may be sit down and get the duct tape, and we're going to the duct tape and the tennis ball early this evening, 6:10 here in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. Joe Barton, Republican, says, wind is a finite resource, and harnessing it would slow the winds down. You know, like wind turbines. Wind is a finite resource, and harnessing it would slow the winds down, which would cause the temperature of Earth to go up. No kidding. He said that. Now, he said that a while back. Server problems all night, especially on this here 8th anniversary and everything. But yeah, wind is a finite resource. That is the most brilliant Republican statement since that greasy-headed old B-movie actor proudly and famously declared, well, Mommy, ketchup is a vegetable. So, yeah. Thanks for letting me know, Lottie. Big volume difference between White Rose and Ustream. Level 4 on Ustream equals level 9 on White Rose. That's not something I can really tech right now. And the whole Ustream thing, it was just a stopgap last night, but we decided to keep it rolling. Just to see what happens. Well, lots of emails coming in. Well, get the program. So I'm sitting here. What engaging radio to a guy email people tell it. Well, but anyway, that's a starting place. I mean, that really did. That felt like a thorn right through the porch. Wind is a finite resource. I wonder if it's as finite as oil. And yeah, okay, we got through to Jim on that. Wind? Jim says, I'm certain that Iolas would not agree. The only wind is coming from his, yes, fundament. Precisely. A couple of things from the mailbag I wanted to share. Coverage of the... Gun Goober rally down in San Antonio. Had a nice... Wanted to supposed rally in San Antonio. While San Antonio, it is certainly more metropolitan than Lubbock or Jasper. We have a population of around 1.4 million, and there were 300 or so people at the plaza, most of which were out-of-towners like, face in palm, Alex Jones. We do have a strong conservative pro-gun segment population, but we also have a Democratic mayor and a fair fraction of progressives. Lived here all of my life. And never have heard this type of hype and misinformed vitriol as was spewed by Mr. Jones. Did Mr. Jones realize that the Alamo is a church? As a fairly new listener, I just want to say how much I enjoy and appreciate your insight, humor, and your touching observations about West Virginia and how it has, and about West Texas, and how it has similarities to the plight in your beautiful state. Please tell the Horn family that the clown show at the Alamo does not reflect the vast majority of the good people of San Antonio and Texas. I do, however, want to extend my apologies to you, the Horn family, and America for what has escaped and caused havoc to the innocent. I wish to apologize for George Bush, Rick Perry, Alex Jones, Ted Cruz, Louis Gohmert, Tom DeLay, John Cornyn, George Bush, and Ted Cruz again. Tony, I hate to tell you, but you left out Joe Barton. Wind is a finite resource, Barton, but you had no way of knowing. You wrote this 2 days ago. I'm sure that there are more, but I'm getting depressed. Tony says, thank you for the program. Take care. Thanks, Tony. Thanks very, very much for your thoughts. Dr. John noting, if wind is a finite resource, when's Barton going to run out of it and shut them up for good? Devoutly to be wished. Oh, and Jan and Jerry are listening via the Ustream stream, and says it's sounding very good. Wonderful. I think this is something we can continue to do. But anyway, it is, and later on, by the way, if you want to jump into the Horn Molloy Skype chat group, send me your Skype handle contact information. I'll pass that on to Duncan, and you can jump in on the whole front porch free-for-all later this evening. And I'm just moving around a little bit. Oh, you know how we talked last night about Mikey Weinstein, and I read you that shared with you that loving note that Jude had shared with me, that note full of the compassion and love that passeth all understanding that comes from being filled with the grace of Christ Jesus. You remember the note. It was the one that told Mikey Weinstein that they hoped he would die soon and go to live with his father, Satan. Or should I say, Satan? Right. Mikey Weinstein, for reasons that pass my understanding, accepted an invitation to come on Radio Rwanda and have a little chat with Radio Rwanda attack blonde Megan Fox. Megan Kelly. Megan Kelly. This is the same woman who sat there rolling her eyes as Godzilla from Wasilla babbled along. The other day. She's got something on her program called the Kelly File. And, of course, over there at Radio Rwanda, they were all head up over Mikey Weinstein's latest effort to get the So Help Me God taken out of the U.S. Air Force Academy's honor oath. And that's about as, it was all downhill from there. Just like the letter writer the other night who upbraided Mikey for doing that very thing. It didn't play real well with Megyn Kelly either. One gets the idea that Mikey was not at all, he got, I guess we could say, frustrated.
The Air Force now considering what some are calling a dramatic change, possibly removing the phrase, "So help me God," from the oath that every cadet has to take. Trace Gallagher explains. Trace?
And the Air Force Academy, Megan, sent some pictures of its new prep school to a local newspaper writer in Colorado Springs. In those pictures, there was a poster of the honor oath, which ends, of course, in "So help me God." Then the local writer sent the picture to Mikey Weinstein, the head of Military Religious Freedom Foundation. Weinstein filed a complaint with the Air Force Academy. The poster was taken down, but the issue is far from settled. The Air Force Academy says, quoting, "The Honor Review Committee had an in-depth discussion about the Honor Code oath. They considered a range of options, and some of those options will be presented to the Academy leaders and ultimately the Academy superintendent for a decision." So no decision, but while this is being debated, Weinstein readily admits that he's gotten some not-so-friendly pushback, including this from a woman who was unidentified, saying, quote, "We are taught in church to hate the sin but love the sinner. But you are all sin, Mr. Weinstein. Our church prays your days be few until you meet your father, Satan." Well,
hey, wow, that's the same email we had. Gotta love him.
Weinstein didn't respond, but actor Mike Farrell, best known for his work on the show MASH, and a board member of MRFF did respond with this, quoting, "No one here is anti-Christian. We just happen to believe that people like you cannot be allowed to shove your belief system down the throat of the men and women at the U.S. Air Force Academy or anywhere in the U.S. military in defiance of our Constitution, but Jay Sekulow, chief counsel for American Center for Law and Justice, says the oath does not violate the Constitution. Here.
Which is kind of interesting, really. Do you know who first brought suit over so help me God oaths in this country? Jehovah's Witnesses. Now, we've all chased them scurrying off our porch. In fact, we had to chase away some Jehovah's Witnesses here just earlier today. They don't take oaths. And it was some Jehovah's Witnesses from West Virginia who in the 1940s brought a case to the Supreme Court saying, you know, this is a violation of our religious freedom to have to swear an oath when it's part of our doctrine that to do so is to violate the, you know, our invisible friend's rules. And you know what? The Supreme Court agreed. And that is why when one takes the oath, say, to tell the truth in a court of law, one swears or affirms. So never mind what Jay Sekulow from the American Center for Law and Justice has to say.
Don't be bullied by my friend Mikey Weinstein. We're friends. We disagree vehemently on this issue. But the fact of the matter is you cannot say that there's a serious Establishment Clause violation by the phrase, so help me God, where the President of the United States would be violating it when they take the oath of office.
Sekulow says he is fine with cadets opting out of the phrase, but not changing the oath altogether. Megan.
Opting out.
Thank you. Joining me now is
right.
Mike.
And this is the same argument, by the way, opting out that the Christianists use in schools.
Well, the little Jewish and Muslim and Hindu children, they don't have to pray to Jesus like us heaven-bound Christians do. They can just stand out in the hall, or they can just sit there silently while we worship our God.
Never mind the fact that you are effectively ostracizing them. And as we discussed last night, the Air Force Academy is absolutely crawling with these evangelicals. So what's that going to do when a young cadet says, "No, I don't think I'm gonna"? Why not just let them? You want to swear your oath to God? Do it in the closet. That's probably the only thing the closet should exist for in this country anymore. So the weirdos can go and make oaths to their invisible friend. But anyway, let's hear what Mikey had to say, because this is fun.
Mikey Weinstein, he's the founder and president of the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, the same group challenging the Air Force Academy to remove this phrase, so help me God. Mikey, thank you for being here. So why not just say to the cadets, if you don't want to say so help me God at the end of it, you don't have to say it. That's good enough.
Well, of course, it's always great to be here in Fox World. We do have this thing called the Constitution, Megan, and thank you for letting me be asking you to be a guest on your show. And it's my friend Jay Sekulow forgets one thing, that we're not just talking about the No Establishment Clause. There's another part of the Constitution, which actually was part of the body of the Constitution, called the No Religious Test, Clause 3, Article 6, which says we will never have a religious test for any position in the federal government. When I was contacted by Pam Zubek of the Colorado Springs Independent on Friday about this, I took one look at the picture. I realized it was wrong. I called Air Force Academy leadership. I had just met less than 24 hours before face-to-face with Lieutenant General Michelle Johnson, the new superintendent, the commanding general.
With all due respect, Mikey, you're not answering my question.
He's trying to, Megan. What do you want him to do? Yell, "Hail Satan," or something?
My question is, why can't they just opt out? They, if they don't want to say, so help me God, they don't have to say that part.
Well, he was trying to explain that to you, that there's a no religious test for office, but never mind.
Well, it's like saying, why don't you just opt out of not robbing a bank? Because robbing a bank violates the law. Let me say it again so that in words of one syllable. It violates, that's three syllables, the law. The Constitution's No Establishment Clause, notwithstanding, irrespective of that, no religious test, Clause 3, Article 6, it violates the law. Moreover, historically, we never even, going back to 1789 when there first was a military oath, nobody ever even had to have an oath. It didn't happen until 1862.
What about
during the Civil
Obama?
War.
You know, our presidents say
it
when they take the oath. The vice presidents say it. In fact, every federal employee says, "So help me God," when they take the oath.
Excuse me.
Hey, I'm just asking the question. Mikey, chill.
Okay.
Chill. Come on. It's okay. I'm just asking the question.
Megan, You know, like I said, I'm in your universe here in Fox. Let me make it clear. You want to talk about presidents, Megan? John Quincy Adams put his hand on a book of laws, not the Bible, when he took the oath. A very devout Christian himself, because he loved the separation of church and state, which makes our country greater than any other country.
So why can't you have that, and then the people who want to say it, they get to say it?
Yeah, why not?
What was your question? The people that want to say it, make it to say it?
Yeah, I mean, you're trying to get rid of it altogether. And the oath altogether is we will not lie, steal, cheat, nor tolerate among us anyone who does. Furthermore, I resolve to do my duty and live honorably, so help me God. I still don't understand why you have a problem.
As I said before,
I don't understand.
You know what? Why don't you let somebody say, so help me God? If they leave it off so it complies with the law. If they want to say, so help me God, perhaps they can do that. But moreover, you know, that poster that was taken down that Pam Zubek sent to me, it was erroneous to begin with. It said, we will not lie or steal, but it forgot the word cheat. It had been up there for many, many years. They had to take it down, believe it or not, talk about the Keystone Constitution.
Oh, that was for the Christians, too.
They forgot to put the word cheat in the code. So it had to come down for that reason anyway, besides the fact that it noxiously violated the United States Constitution.
It was noxious.
Why? I know. I like Mikey. Mikey's been on this program many years ago. Why even show up on Radio Rwanda? Why subject yourself to this kind of idiocy? I think if he'd been on there for another 15 seconds, his brains would have started leaking out his ears. That's what happens over there. But it's, you know, out of the frying pan and into the fire. We go from Radio Rwanda down to South Carolina Stan. You know, the South Carolina has terrible unemployment, even in the best of times. Very few people with union representation. Low wages. Poverty out the gazoo. And, you know, with unemployment still running 7.2%, higher in South Carolina, Stan. There are a lot of folks who need help. And they need help in, they need food help, they need clothing help. We might recall that it looks like there's going to be at least probably something on the order of $5 billion cut from the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP. So that's what takes us to Spartanburg, South Carolina, Stan, where a group called Upstate Atheists, who have very high-functioning moral centers, despite the absence of an invisible friend, got together and pooled resources and created care packages. What with cold weather approaching, even in South Carolina, Stan, pulled together care packages for homeless people at the Spartanburg Soup Kitchen. They got gloves, they got socks, toothpaste, toothbrushes, combs, soap, ponchos, razors, antiseptic wipes, deodorant, tissues, gum, stuff like that. And they went to the Spartanburg Soup Kitchen and said, you know, we just want to help out. And they even went so far as to tell the Spartanburg Soup Kitchen, we won't wear our Upstate Atheist t-shirts. We won't tell anybody who we're with. We just want to, you know, we're just trying to help folks. That from a story in the Spartanburg Herald Journal. You know where this is going, right? Yeah. The Spartanburg Soup Kitchen told them absolutely not. Eve Brannon's president of Upstate Atheists, and she said, I hope we can provide a package for everyone who needs one. Whatever we have left, we'll donate to a homeless shelter in the upstate. So, it turns out that the executive director of the soup kitchen is one Lou Landrum. And she said, I will resign as executive director of this here soup kitchen before I'll ever let some atheist volunteer to help out the poor. This is a ministry to serve God, she said. We stand on the principles of God. Do they think our guests are so ignorant that they don't know what an atheist is? Why are they targeting us? They don't give any money. I wouldn't want their money. You got this? Isn't there something in their holy book about that kind of behavior? Didn't their Savior say something about doing it to the least of these? And he didn't say what, but only if the money, only if the help comes from an acceptable source. Lou Landrum went on, and she said, they can set up across the street from the soup kitchen. They can have the devil there with them, but they better not come across the street. Gloves, ponchos, toothpaste, combs, deodorant, socks. Devil socks is what they are, these devil socks. WWJD, right? Which, in turn, takes me back to a note that I got earlier today from Steve. A couple of things. One, Steve was tickled yesterday by the news that the Emperor Commodus had wanted to change the name of the Roman Empire to Commodiana, because that immediately caused him to think. He says, now, I'm Catholic, but I think this is funny. The Commodian Catholic Church. That's what it would have been. Charming. But more to the point, with regard to the story of Chappie Klingenschmidt that we went into, you know, he's running for office, and he's a man of many talents. Just ask him, he'll tell you. Steve said, Bob, I'm listening to the Chappie porn guitar, whatever it is. Remember the cheesy music in the background? Funny, it reminds me of a cheap gay porn motif with the cheesy music. Not to mention his masturbatory rant about the size of his penis, I mean, record of accomplishments. I continue, says Steve, to sincerely have a hard time believing this shit is serious. Everything is such a cliche and seems as though he's trying to touch every buzzword and dog whistle in the right-wing playbook as to render it meaningless. And he's incapable of seeing the complete contradiction of using terms like pro-life and gun rights in the same sentence. I ain't that special or smart, Steve says, but how is it that I can see that stark, blatant, utter inconsistency, and apparently this dimwit, or the dimwits who watch him, can't? Well, I think you kind of hit on it there, Steve, the operative word being dimwit. I've always tried very hard to at least understand the other side, and often do. But I'll be honest with you, I really just can't get these folks. I have a hard time thinking it's real. It just strikes me to be at a level of ignorance and stupid that I can't fathom. I often wonder if we on the left have our crazies. We do, and I know I'm biased, but I just can't see this level of not just crazy, but violent, hateful crazy in the left. That's because they're not there. There seems to be something endemic about being a lefty that says, let's just leave each other be if we don't see eye to eye. While on the right, it's this constant demonization of those that they disagree with, insisting how evil people who disagree with them are, and even killing those they disagree with. We just don't seem to see people on the left running out to shoot up the RNC, Heritage, or Cato. I don't want to believe that there is something inherently violent or hateful about conservatives, but I don't know how else to look at it from the landscape I see. Perhaps being conservative by its nature is where it comes from. A conservative, by definition, wants little or no change and relishes the status quo and is, therefore, more resistant and, in fact, scared of it. So they lash out. But the weird part, fire bad, right? But the weird part of it is that they just can't live their relative lack of change themselves. But they have to make sure nobody else changes either, in addition to reaching violently to those who do embrace change. Bottom line, I get that we need to be on guard regarding these people, but my God, it really is hard to take this level of crazy seriously. Signed, Steve. But Steve, you gotta. Because, well, look at the soup kitchen. For pity's sakes. Oh, we don't want you helping out any homeless if you can't do it in Jesus' name. You know, that was the same problem with Chappie Klingenschmitt, remember? Steve also noted just a couple of minutes ago, so help me God is not part of the presidential oath. So Megyn Kelly was wrong about that, too, apparently. Beautiful. Robert in Australia writing in, so help me God, the subject line, leave it in, but just don't say it. What if I want to say something else? So instead of so help me God, what if I want to say so help me Aqua Buddha? Or anything else equally as silly. There you go. So help me Flying Spaghetti Monster. So help me Ganesh. So help me Huitzilopochtli. I love any opportunity to use Huitzilopochtli. Dr. John, going back to Mikey Weinstein, Dr. John says, the worst thing about this is that Mikey Weinstein seems like a really smart guy. Imagine what he could have done if he didn't have to devote his life to teaching basic civics to right-wingers. Part of me really grieves that good people have to go to such lengths to fix things that shouldn't be in dispute in the first place. In a way, just by foreground issues like these, the right wins. And Dr. John is correct, because it's a form of, resource drain? Yeah. Sergi with a note regarding Joe Barton. Oh, sure, we have some real smart public office holders here in North Texas like Wendy Davis, but we also have jackasses like Joe Barton. Wind is a finite resource. This idiot represents part of the county I live in, Tarrant, and let me say right now that the part of the county he represents is a part of the county I avoid like the plague, not only because of the politics, but because of the suburban sprawl and exploding meth labs. And I get the idea Sergi's not using the word exploding figuratively. As for the statement itself, going from the logic he uses in that there line, I can proudly announce that, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, I have the perfect solution to climate change problems. Since wind is apparently a finite resource now, I'm going to go ahead and assume sunlight is now too. I'll simply put out an APB to every homie that is packing some extra poundage, which I have to admit is most of us, to go out sunning every day. We'll soak up so much sunlight that the Earth's temperature won't just stabilize, it'll start cooling. Yay! Problem solved! Anybody up for bowling? Signed, Sergi, we just have to keep the homies from Taco Bell lest the resulting farts ruin the effort. Kyle. You know, in a place like Texas, the very idea of going to Taco Bell, see, I'd think there'd be a law. We call it Taco Hell around here. Oh, and by the way, a nice note coming in from our buddy Harry. He wrote earlier in the day in regard to the 8th anniversary of the Horn. Congratulations on the 8th anniversary of an internet radio program that I value more than any other audio or audiovisual media programming in existence. That's tall praise. Dear Bob, Harry says, this is just a relatively brief note to congratulate you on the 8th anniversary of your internet-only radio program. Although I have been a member of your audience for only 15 months or so, you know, you're not a member of the audience, Harry. You are a member of the Horn Family Commune. Although I've been a member of the audience for only 15 months or so, I have come to value your program more highly than any other audio or audiovisual program currently available to me, period. My reasons for this statement are relatively straightforward. First, as I may have mentioned to you previously, I gave up on regular television programming of any kind about 4 or 5 years ago. And even though the house I currently live in has 300 or so cable TV channels, and nothing on, as the saying goes, I have now found that I cannot tolerate watching even MSNBC. Having weaned myself away from the TV culture, I now find even MSNBC programs and their hosts to be too artificial and too stage-acted to watch for more than 15 or 20 minutes. As I sometimes quip to my friends, the only completely genuine news programming that I've identified on any TV network, cable or otherwise, is the Weather Channel. And even the Weather Channel now seems to fill up airtime with frivolous documentaries about, for example, the 10 most extreme weather events of the last decade, with, of course, the ominous music underneath, and other non-news fluff. I never imagined that I would someday be condemning the Weather Channel for too much infotainment. But I guess this reflects the extent to which my standards for media programming have changed in the last 4 or 5 years. I'm now a much less forgiving consumer of media programming. And yet Harry tunes in here. We have much to be forgiven for. Second, having lost faith in the investigative journalism commitment of NPR and other public radio networks, and also feeling sometimes completely unengaged with the one or two interview news programs that I still trust, e.g. Amy Goodman's Democracy Now!, I find that however precarious your finances and resources, your program is the only one that I look forward to listening to night after night. And that was true even during my long, dark period of January through September when I was hardly ever able to listen to the program live. And even when you, and this happened tonight apparently, and even when you forget to turn flip the 13th switch, or when the server is acting up or shutting down, or your need to reboot the computer is accompanied by your private but broadcasted mutterings about the petulance of the hardware, I am a completely forgiving audience. And now that I've finally obtained a reliable and strong enough Wi-Fi signal, because I'm now sharing a private and security-protected Wi-Fi network with a neighbor who is also a good friend, it is only your program that is sacrosanct on my schedule, night after night. My only regret about your 8th anniversary is my own inability to make any financial contributions at all to keep the program afloat. But I hope that eventually I'll find steady work here in Baltimore and that this work will pay me enough so that I can regularly pass on some of those earnings to the Horn. Once again, congratulations on the anniversary of a program that is unique for the amount of time you devote to phone conversations with listeners and to various brief commentary that listeners send you via email, Twitter, and your chat room. May the program continue to flourish for many more leap years. That's a long time. Warmest regards, Harry. Thanks, Harry. That's the kind of stuff that we print out and save. Especially for those, dark, dim moments. Going back to the Spartanburg, South Carolina soup kitchen that don't want no atheist gloves going on, no homeless hands. Jan and Jerry writing in, subject line, Las Vegas. In the city of Las Vegas, it is illegal to feed the homeless because they want the homeless to go to centers to handle their kind. She says, and a big ditto to Harry. So you got it, yeah. Harry, you got an amen. And the whole finitude of the wind is still bothering Irish Dave considerably. In finite, I'm all confused. Should you locate your wind farms where the sun don't shine? Jim noting, yes, congratulations. I was there the first night. We agree to disagree, but can still have a conversation without severe acrimony. That's true. Our acrimony never gets severe. Irish Dave wondering about the Air Force Academy, noting, so California Air Force Academy cadets could say, so help me, Rhonda? Yeah. So what a delightful start to the program this evening. And I have a feeling it's only going to get better. you can have the devil over there with you. Also last night, we had a little conversation about some animal cruelty. And you all responded passionately to that horrible story. I tried to find out after the program if the guy was still in jail, but I didn't have any luck in the effort. So, no answers there. But if you thought that was bad, in Malibu, a lovely, lovely place, if ever there was one, at least three sea lions washed ashore. And, you know, with the pollution and climate change, it has become not at all unusual to find that dolphins and whales and all manner of sea life are trying to flee that medium in which they live, which is beginning to prove toxic to them. You know, it's a bit of a sign. But lo and behold, three sea lions washed ashore in Malibu, California, and folks from the California Wildlife Center discovered that the sea lions had been shot to death. What it turns out, what it is squid fishermen shoot the sea lions to keep them away while they're fishing for squid. The local squid fishermen, however, didn't see anything. Nothing at all. Nope. Those sea lions probably shot themselves. And it really wouldn't be any fun at all this evening if we didn't have a Chappie update. I'm sure right now Steve is reaching for the tennis ball. He's got his campaign up and running, Chappie does. But that doesn't mean he's leaving off the essence of his ministry. Chappie is presently all head up about ENDA, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. And why? Because the Employment Non-Discrimination Act is going to wind up jailing poor, poor persecuted Christians who refuse to make gay wedding cakes. Yeah. So then this. He wrote this. Luckily for you, you don't have to hear his voice or any of the sappy guitar music in the background. So-called homosexual civil rights commissions are replacing courts across America. Really? Stacked with Democrat appointees and given unlimited power to punish, intimidate, and threaten Christian business owners. Not on my watch. Not in this America. Let's end it now. The militant gays, anybody, any Horn Family Commune members from the gay community want to explain? I mean, how do you dress to be a militant gay? I mean, are there machine guns involved? You know, camouflage clothing? What? Help me here. The militant gays essentially demand, let us have sex in your house or we will kick you out of your house. I guess I don't get around enough. Where? Is this a San Francisco thing? I mean, a New York thing? I mean, is this, I don't know, P-Town, Fire Island? What? He really, I can't imagine that he actually types. I have more of an image of Chappie with a sharp stick and a little pile of bat shit scratching this stuff out on the back of a leaf, but he really committed, he committed this to written language. The militant gays essentially demand, let us have sex in your house or we will kick you out of your house. It'll be kind of like the Guantanamo torture, only it'll involve show tunes. Do Christians no longer have control of their own home or business? I haven't seen anything to the contrary, Chappie. This is coming to the USA if we allow ENDA to become law. I've been warning for 2 years that ENDA would... Well, of course, Common Core and Agenda 21 and... I've been warning for 2 years that ENDA would bankrupt Christian businesses. Now the Oregon government is helping this anti-Christian intimidation. Just imagine if Democrats pass ENDA nationwide to investigate all Christians who refuse to participate in gay weddings. He puts weddings in scare quotes. Well, one scare quote, he forgot the one on the end. Jail the Christians who refuse to celebrate gay weddings. They're coming for us, people. This is no joke. This will happen to you if we allow ENDA to become law. Sign a petition to Congress today to stop this nationwide anti-Christian discrimination bill from becoming law. Friends, their version of tolerance now requires bankrupting Christian employers. Wait a minute, Chappie. I mean, you've got a Ph.D. in Invisible Friend, right? Well, isn't there something in there where your Savior says, don't worry about what you shall have, don't worry about tomorrow, for not a sparrow falls from the sky that that God Almighty doesn't... yeah, it's in there. I'm certain of it. But here he is worrying about bankrupting Christian employers or any public restaurant or retail store that refuses men full access to women's bathrooms. Again with the bathrooms. Was every last one of these fundies potty trained at gunpoint? Maybe I was a little too close to home with that sharp stick and pile of batshit reference. When's the last time that a couple of gay folks knocked on your door and said, "Pardon us, we'd like to come inside and have sex in your house. And if you don't let us, we're gonna throw you out of your house, and then we'll redecorate." And, oh God! This is one of those moments when I wish our dear friend Peter Godbold was still doing Strictly Confidential. I think the on air merriment would have probably lasted the entire 2 hours of his program, with of course the obligatory disco track thrown in for good measure. They're going to demand to have sex in your house. Well, come on in. Pinochle night's not till tomorrow. It's going to be kind of dull around here this evening. Oh, and by the way, it is a thorn in the front porch Thursday, and we've got a thorn here for Angry and Robert and Philip and John and all of our other friends. Up over in Australia, is this one of those somebody's getting some relief moments? It kind of feels like it. Usually, it's the Joe Bartons of the world. Wind is a finite resource, who drive us half to distraction. But now, I guess Oz is kind of, as strange as it may seem, Oz is kind of a clearinghouse for. for climate denial weirdos too? Have I got that right, guys? Australian Environment Minister Greg Hunt is playing down links between the country's brush fire disaster. Remember Robert the other evening inviting the gun goobers to come down there and go up there and shoot down the brush fires? Yeah. Greg Hunt says, there's really not that much of a connection between climate change and the brush fires. Oh, for heaven's sakes. Late yesterday, Greg Hunt had what is described as a testy interview with the BBC radio. And gave a full-throated defense of Tony Abbott's claim that wildfires have nothing to do with changing climate patterns. Al Gore, meanwhile, had said that that's like the tobacco industry claiming smoking doesn't cause lung cancer. So that full-throated defense by Greg Hunt, yeah, this was it. I looked up what Wikipedia said, for example, just to see what the rest of the world thought. And it opens up with the fact that brush fires in Australia are frequently occurring events during the autumn months of the year. Large areas of land are ravaged every year by brush fires, and that's the Australian experience. That's my bad Australian accent, too. My apologies. Well, like I said, somebody's getting some relief. Us. But it's no relief. It's no relief to recognize that the stupid, and it's one thing to be stupid. It's another thing to have the stupid impact the fundamental ability of human beings to go on being human beings on a particular piece of real estate named planet Earth, from which we have yet to figure out a way to emigrate. Tony Abbott has in the past referred to climate change as absolute crap. To which Greg Marks responded. Greg Hunt responded. In Parliament, our Prime Minister has expressed clear support for the science, you know, behind climate change. And they asked, so Abbott no longer thinks it's absolute crap? With great respect, you can swear on international radio, you can invite me from Australia to do this, you can be profoundly rude, I'm happy to answer, but I'm not going to be sworn at. Sworn at? So now, quoting the Prime Minister of Australia, is swearing at his environment minister. Even though it was Tony Abbott who said, climate change is absolute crap. And as has been noted, job one of this new right-wingist Australian government is to get rid of the industrial pollution tax. Instead, they want to plant trees. You know, for the brush fires to burn. Ow! Help. Yeah, like I said, lots of thorns. Lots of thorns. And back to the mailbag real quick. Ron and Raleigh. Dang it, Bob. I just woke from a nappy and walked smack dab into Chappie. See what I did? From nappy to Chappie. Bob, you have to be aware of big gay quartering laws in Frisco. Oh, yeah. You know what? Remember last night when we were going over his campaign? He didn't get around to the quartering troops, and now we know why. because it's not going to be it's only troops that are forbidden from being compulsorily quartered by the Bill of Rights. There's nothing in there about not being able to compel you to quarter the gay in your house. It all begins to make so much sense. Dr. John noting, you can tell Chappie's lying because his lips are moving. More of that finite wind, I guess. ENDA would prohibit discrimination in hiring and employment on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity by civilian non-religious employers with at least 15 employees. That's pretty clear. So it wouldn't affect churches, religious 501c3s, or most businesses in America. In 2008, according to the census, there were 27 million firms in the U.S., and 21 million of those had no employees, i.e. no payroll beyond the owner. Of the 6 million remaining, 4.6 million had fewer than 9 employees. So all together now, it's all 1, 2, 3. Bullshit! There's no let up, is there? Hardly at all. And so there, and right here, right now, we are officially at the 8 years to the mark anniversary. It's 2 minutes past 7 o'clock. Hey, Sam and WV, good to see you in the chat room. And I guess it's about time we took a break. Time to fire up Thorn in the Front Porch Thursday. If we've got the usual suspects together, I'm sure Duncan will shoot me a note. Shoot a note to me. Throw Mother from the Train a kiss, right? You know how to reach the program, of course, 304-658-3333. Or on the Skype line, well, no, we're going to do the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. But anyway, Bob Kincaid Horn is the handle there. A little break, and then we'll get the conversation radio rolling. And, of course, since we're going to be gone tomorrow, we're trying to raise about $280 this evening. And thus far, no takers. Help is greatly appreciated. This is Conversation Radio. 8 years old it is. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Say lights taking you nowhere.
Angel,
come love, baby. Look at that sky, life's begun. Nights are warm and the days are young.
Come love, baby.
There's my feet and love, that's all. What's I'm making you see for a little opening doors and pulling some strings.
Angel,
then walk luck and you looked in time. Never look back, walk tall, act fine. Back down.
my message, don't break my heart. Doing all right, you've got to get smart. Wish upon, day upon day, I believe, oh Lord, I believe all the way. Shadows, run for the shadows in his golden years. As my baby locked her door, what's I making you say those little cool? Don't let me hear you say life's taking you nowhere.
Angel,
come with us, baby. Shadows in these golden years.
I'll stay with you, baby, for a thousand years. Nothing's gonna touch you in these golden years.
Golden years. Golden years.
It's Thursday, October 24, 2013.
The end of net metering, he says,
will stop consumer choice in Arizona and stop solar.
Arizona utilities' secret plot to kill the solar industry.
There is a statistically significant difference in the incidence of cancer, asthma, and birth defects.
Hawaiian Island rejects being a testing ground for GMOs and pesticides. Washington State fighting GMOs, too. Another U.S. city breaks up with coal. Plus,
the owners of these assets are not going to take kindly to their value being impaired by policies designed to tackle climate change.
Warning, fossil fuels may not be a good investment.
Warning, all of those stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
This is serious, serious stuff.
Nah, it's just your green news report. Okay, Desi Doyen, we've been following this story. Greenpeace activists arrested up in the Arctic trying to board a Russian oil rig in order to stop drilling up there in the Arctic. They were arrested. The Russians charged them with piracy. They might be in jail for years. Those charges have now been thrown out and changed to hooliganism. But they still may be in jail for years under these charges.
Yes, Greenpeace vows to fight the new charges, which still do carry a sentence of 7 years in a Russian prison.
We will keep our eyes on that one.
Meanwhile, out in Arizona...
This is just the latest battle over solar power that industry insiders say is really damaging Arizona's rank as a national leader, and it could end up costing you money.
Arizona's biggest electric utility, Arizona Public Service, which despite its name is actually privately owned, has been forced to admit that it secretly bankrolled an anti-solar ad campaign, funded anti-solar astroturf groups, and launched a secret campaign to undermine and replace regulators on Arizona's Public Utility Commission, all with the goal of protecting its business model and monopoly over electricity generation throughout much of Arizona. The company wants to force rooftop solar owners to pay extra for access to the grid and cancel net metering policies, which actually pay solar owners to feed energy back into the grid that they're not actually using.
It costs money to extend the grid to these houses, so why shouldn't they have to pay for it?
That's the company's argument, but the Public Utility Commission disagrees. The fact that they've been doing this all secretly should give you an idea of the strength of their position. Unburnable carbon. That's the new warning for investors in oil, gas, and coal from the International Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, warning that the biggest risk to investors is stranded assets, according to the OECD's Secretary General, Angel Gurria.
If policymakers cap carbon emissions, then we could have what I would call unburnable assets. Now, the looming choice may be either stranding those assets or stranding the planet. It may come to that.
Numerous studies have calculated that two-thirds of known fossil fuel reserves must stay in the ground unburned if humanity is to have any hope of avoiding catastrophic climate change. Out in Hawaii,
several local doctors had expressed support for the legislation, citing serious health concerns.
There is a strong anecdotal evidence that there is a statistically significant difference in the incidence of cancer, asthma, and birth defects.
The Hawaiian island of Kauai rejects being a testing ground for the biotech industry's genetically modified crops and pesticides, which have quietly replaced traditional pineapple and sugarcane crops over the last 10 years.
It's really quite simple. Tell us what you're spraying, what you're growing, and then let us do a study to determine whether people really are getting sick.
That was Kauai politician Gary Hooser who introduced the legislation. It puts strict new regulations on the use and testing of pesticides and limits some genetically modified crops to protect Kauai's natural genetic diversity.
So they're using these isolated islands to test pesticides and GMOs and not telling the people who live there?
They're not telling them what they're spraying or when they're spraying, and they were doing it next to residences and schools.
Nice. So they're trying to stop them, and I guess Monsanto or someone is filing a lawsuit against them, right?
Yes, they say they will likely do that. Speaking of Monsanto, in Washington State, Monsanto, DuPont, Pepsi, and other major corporations have poured millions of dollars to fight the GMO labeling campaign that Washington State residents are trying to get in a statewide ballot initiative.
It's what we saw down here in California last year, Prop 37, when these big food companies fought against the people's right to simply know what it is they're eating.
Exactly. Finally, Asheville, North Carolina is going coal-free. This week, the City Council of Asheville voted unanimously to end the city's use of coal-fired electricity and will co-develop a plan with coal plant owner Duke Energy to phase out polluting coal. Asheville joins Los Angeles and other major American cities who now reject coal for electricity generation.
Good for Asheville, North Carolina. For much more on that and all of the other stories we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download us anytime via iTunes, Stitcher, or TuneIn. Find us and like us on the Facebook and follow us 24/7 on the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Fourteen past seven here on the Eastern Time Zone. This is the Horn. 8th anniversary. I wish we had cake, ice cream, maybe pie. I like pie. But we'll just do with the usual conversation this evening. Thanks going out to Kate, to Jude, to Sal, and to Jan and Jerry out in Vegas. Taken together, they have responded admirably to what I mentioned at the beginning of the program, the anniversary challenge coming from our buddy Randy. Randy contributed $10 for each of the 10 total years we've been at this late last night. And I mentioned it at the beginning of the program, and between Jude and Kate and Sal and Jan and Jerry, the total has gotten to wait a minute. Okay, you know how I am with math on the fly, right? Yeah, $160. So we are well on the way toward tonight's fundraising goal, $280. This Wednesday, 120 to go, 12 people, $10 a piece, and we will have met our anniversary fundraising goal. That having been said, I want to mention I want to mention something that our buddy the Angry Indian sent along last night, and I'd seen it previously, but I'm glad he brought it to my attention because it needs to be discussed in a certain amount of context. You know, right-wingers are always worried about context, and I figure we may as well just swim in it. You heard the Green News Report and all that business about the skullduggery against solar energy out in Arizona. Can you, did that make you just kick a piece of furniture? You're in a place that's nothing but sunshine, and yet the public utilities want to keep on using filthy hydrocarbon. Oh, my God. Well, so that's Arizona, where there's lots of sunshine. Imagine the hurdles one has to clear in a place like West Virginia stand when one wants to do solar or wind. It's almost insurmountable. But I'm mentioning it because somewhere down the road, part of the planning is that we've talked about it for a lot of years, and with the rise of things like crowdsourcing, we're finally going to take steps toward getting the horn essentially off of anything even remotely related to coal-fired power. It's just well past time, and I figured I would use the occasion of this 8th anniversary to make mention of that. So that'll happen somewhere down the road. In fact, we've got a member of the Horn family who is working with me to make that happen. So more later as we develop the plan. But the fundamental disconnect there is the reality of what it means when we continue to use filthy fossil fuels to provide electricity. Jan noting the Arizona story made Jerry scream, "What?" Yeah, me too. That's why we don't do video here, because there's a lot of rending of garments and tearing at hair and strange little forest wild animal noises that when I mute the mic and right. So that brings me to this piece of information. This is a press release from Earth First Newswire, and you know Earth First is frequently referred to as eco-terrorists, you know, because they don't want to they want to stop poisoning the planet so humans can keep on living on it, you know. Or even not humans living on it, but, you know, have some sort of a planet that can sustain life. Over at Earth First, the Earth First Newswire says, the journal Eco-Psychology released a new study last month and about the psychological impact of mountaintop removal on Appalachians, called increased risk of depression for people living in coal mining areas of central Appalachia. The study, written by West Virginia University scholars Michael Hendricks and Kestrel A. Innes Wimsatt, confirms the position of radical mental health collectives like the Icarus Project, which asks the question, how do we live with the monocropped corporate realities? It then quotes from the abstract of the article. This study examines the relationship between depression symptoms and living in areas where mountaintop removal coal mining is practiced. Data were analyzed from a survey of 8,591 adults residing in central Appalachian areas both with and without coal mining. The survey included a validated measure of depression severity. Results showed that diagnosable levels of major depression were present in almost 17% of respondents in mountaintop removal mining areas, compared to 10% of residents in non-mining areas. This disparity was partly attributable to socioeconomic disadvantage, but after statistical control for income, education, and other risks, depression risk for residents in the mountaintop removal area remained significantly elevated. Odds ratio equals 1.40, 95% confidence interval, 1.15 to 1.171. This study contributes to the empirical evidence in support of the concept of solastalgia. Wow. Going to have to look that one up later. And indicates that persons who experience environmental degradation from mountaintop removal coal mining are at elevated risk for depression. The new study adds to a rising body of work on the subject, including the recent study, The Effects of Mountaintop Removal Coal Mining on Mental Health, Well-Being, and Community Health in Central Appalachia, which states, mountaintop removal coal mining is a form of surface mining frequently utilized in Central Appalachia. MTR is exactly what the name suggests, mountaintops are removed to expose coal seams for cheap extraction. The harmful environmental implications of this form of mining are well documented. Research also shows that MTR has detrimental effects on human health and on the functioning of local communities. Although virtually no research has been undertaken on the psychological effects of MTR, reports of people living close to MTR sites, along with research on similar environmental problems, suggest a high probability of an increased risk of mental health problems for those living near MTR sites. Solastalgia, there it is again, due to drastic... Anybody want to send me an email? I can't look it up right now. Solastalgia due to drastic environmental changes, eco-anxiety, and stress resulting from the dangerous and noxious aspects of MTR are likely among the most significant contributors to this increased risk of mental health problems. High rates of unemployment and poverty and lower rates of educational attainment persist in central Appalachia, despite significant gains in other areas of Appalachia. These pre-existing socioeconomic problems compound the stressors created by MTR. And then creating a bit of a linkage, research has shown that there is mounting evidence to suggest that solastagia, S-O-L-A-S-T-A-G-I-A, I've been mispronouncing, solastagia, has become an embedded problem for people in areas affected by heavy resource extraction such as the tar sands or mountaintop removal. Oh, here's a definition. No, it's solastalgia again. Is a term coined to describe this place-based distress engendered by unwelcome environmental change. It is a psychoterratic mental health issue. That is, it is an earth-related mental health problem stemming from negatively perceived and felt environmental change. Solastalgia is especially distressing for those who directly witness the destruction of their home environment and who feel intimately connected to the place in which they are rooted. I can't imagine many people in this country much more rooted to their place, the sense of place, than here. That's why people stay for generation after generation, you know, 9, 10 generations. So you get the idea. Mountaintop removal poisons people's bodies. It poisons their unborn children. And it even poisons their minds. That's pretty stunning. And of course, there is one means, and one means only. To bring an end to it. There is only one bill in the Congress that would end the horrors of mountaintop removal. You know what that is. It's the ACACT, ACHEACT.org, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, which was brought about by the efforts of the ACE campaign. So understand, when you take action to encourage your member of Congress, your senator, to get behind the ACACT, you are engaging in as profound an act as you might ever do. And it is only through the dedicated action of grassroots committed individuals that we're going to get this done. No help comes from the Sierra Club. No help comes from the big greens. We get magnificent counsel and guidance from the folks at Earth Justice. That's it. So it is you and your insistence that your member of the House sign this bill that is going to get us over the hump. And by the way, thanks very kindly to Todd and to Bob for taking us further forward. We are now only $90 away from the fundraising goal for this evening. A note from Kate. Happy 8th. Kate says this $50 is in memory of my friend Alice from Helen Hollers, and to celebrate our eighth year. Who'd have ever thunk it way back then in the days of Peter Godbold? Kate, on the high desert in Montana. I was thinking about it earlier today. You know, Ferg wasn't 10 years old yet. Doodle wasn't 9. Margie was 11. 12. So much has changed. And yet, we managed to be here. And we have managed to be here because you find value in helping to keep the community going. And that's an inspiring thing over a period of something like 8 years. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Yes, sir.
Hey, Bill.
Good evening.
How you doing?
I'm all right. You gonna have the group on tonight, or?
I'm waiting on Duncan to give me the good word.
Okay, because it's fascinating for me to get a chance to converse with people who actually know what the hell's going on in the world. You know, doesn't happen around here too often. My neighbors are nice people, but a lot of them are made it over here from a life that was so tough when they were kids. I don't even want to hear about it. They were in Yugoslavia and God knows where in Europe. There's a couple of good books about Europe immediately following the Second World War and what a crazy, chaotic situation it was for those folks to try to live in that environment, you know?
Yeah.
And the folks here, they had a spaghetti dinner here today, but I'll tell you, I don't know, I feel really out of place because of the... To grow up in the 60s was an amazingly different situation. If you were in a major city area, you know, the world was spinning, man. Things that you had been taught were changing in front of your eyes, and it wasn't too tough, you know. I mean, there was some crazy good times going on, and the music was great in almost every school, every style. The guys were and women were the performers out of the Bay Area, you know, and out of almost everywhere, and it was strange because, well, you and I know what the record companies are about. I mean, if you ever read one of their contracts, it was bend over and sign here. You know, it was that kind of a situation. Everything was in their favor.
Yeah, it wasn't exactly supporting the arts.
No, what they sent me was, you're going to do your own recording, and Cleveland, we're not going to send you a producer, and... Because they didn't care if it didn't sell. You could sell enough to cover your costs, and if it didn't, there's a book called Stiffed, STIFFED, which is a study of the cutout market. You're familiar with what I say when I say cutout market?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, how they would package a shipment of recordings to a guy, and you'd have the stuff that didn't sell, and they would cream it, as they say. They would put in a few copies of things that were good sellers. And anyway, it got to a point where the guys were getting boxes of just lousy stuff. And one guy in, I think it was Philadelphia, complained, and he met with an accident that put him in a hospital. Physical abuse of some kind. You know. And you carry this from any form of money making, you can find some kind of corruption. What you talked about with coal.
Sure.
At its best, it was filth to mine, because we don't know what other chemicals were being released when they were pulling coal out of the ground. You know?
Oh, well, we're learning the hard way, but yeah.
You'd know better than me, but, I don't know what the answer would have been. You see, I got a buddy who's helping to rebuild the buildings from the copper mine in Arizona, and he's telling me, he says, they weren't welding in those days. The fastening was all non-welded because they could not weld in the 1880s, I guess, in the 1870s.
Yeah, I guess it hadn't come along yet, had it?
Yeah. It's hard to think about because it's so common in our life.
That's the way it is, though, Bill, with a lot of things we take for granted. I remember being astonished when I found out that canning, you know, like canning food,
yeah,
was only invented in 1840-something.
Oh, my God, because I was from...
Up until then, everything was either dried, salted, or smoked.
Yeah. Well, you were, no doubt, how long was your family still canning stuff?
Oh, we still can.
Good. Good, because my grandmother, I remember my grandmother and my mother and my aunt down in the basement with doing all that kind of stuff, and that was the late 40s when they were doing it, 47 maybe, that I can first, you know, I was just first old enough to remember that all this smell is emanating from the basement and all the work they were doing down there, and, you know, it's just... it was amazing the changes that I've seen in my life, and I'm not that old, but it was just a funny time. There was a television wasn't out yet. I saw the first TV I ever saw maybe in 48. One of my neighbors had a strange looking TV that had a mirror, and this picture faced up out of the set. I saw him in later years. I had a friend of him who was a repairman who collected the old stuff. So I did get a chance to see that one again. And you remember the projector TVs they were using in bars?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was an amazing throwback to other stuff. Yeah, it was just a funny time because of the changes. I remember the launching of, what was it, the Jupiter, the thing that didn't go anywhere? After Sputnik?
Yeah.
The first American, was it a Jupiter, or what the hell was it, the rocket that didn't, or was it a Navy launch that didn't take the thing up?
Oh, there? I can't recall off the top of my head.
Me neither. Well,
of course, I was busy not being born yet, so.
Yeah, you were probably not walking around yet, for sure, or crawling.
Wasn't even floating around at that point.
Yeah. And so these things were just strange, and, yeah, you know. I'm hoping to be on when the other fellows get on, because it's good to really get a chance to interchange ideas with people with some actual thinking process, you know. Because around here, you're lucky if you can find somebody that can even talk about baseball or football correctly, with some knowledge of the game, you know. I tell people, look, when I was 5 years and 10 months old, I stood on... Euclid Avenue and watch the 48 Indians drive by in convertibles, the world champions. And that's how long ago that was. And I was downtown Cleveland at age 21 when the Colts fans were all over downtown, and the Browns beat them the next day. When they used to have the plain old-fashioned championship game, you know?
Yeah, before it was a Super Bowl.
Yeah, before all kind of money was being made out of... of the advertising and the great seers sitting there telling you who's analyzing the team like it was. How come they can't analyze the political system in the same?
Yeah, isn't that, well? But that goes back to something we were talking about the other night. Most professional sports were founded by industrialists who wanted to divert the attentions of people who might be disenchanted into something that they could brawl in the streets over, but not have any negative impact on the bottom line or the quarterly profit and loss statement.
Yeah, the Chicago Staleys, or the Staley.
The Decatur Staleys.
Decatur, yes. They were, what were they, starch or sugar or?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, I remember, you know, Staley was a syrup, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was like corn syrup or sugar or something, because.
Yeah. Hey, stand by, Bill. We've got the gang in the Horn Malloy Skype chat room, so I want to bring them on board.
Oh, for sure. Bring on some of those guys. I like to listen to people too.
And I'm going to bring on another phone line as well. Stand by.
Okay.
Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Juanita.
Well, hey, Juanita. Stand by while I bring on the Skype group.
Okay.
Hey, Skype gang.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, Bob.
Hi, Bob.
All right. Skype group roll call. Duncan, we got Greg, we got Sergi, we got Jay Cruz, and we got Larry. Over on the traditional phone lines, we got Juanita, and we've got Bill. All good?
Yes. I don't know how good, but I'm here.
Greg's our resident music aficionado. You ever got music questions?
Yeah, we distant, some sort of distant distaff relation to Keith Richards, right, Greg?
Oh, yeah, there you go. You got it.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Him and Malloy go back and forth on music in the Malloy chat.
Oh, yeah, Mike has the very much the soul of a DJ.
What was he playing last night that you just hated?
He was playing some Simple Red from the 90s, I guess.
Oh, Simply Red, yeah.
Yeah, Simply Red, yeah, yeah. And it, you know, it just sounded like crap, I don't know.
Well, I like that version of the Harold Melvin and Holding Back the Years, or whatever it is, that song, yeah.
Sometimes he'll go a little too 40s for me. I'm not that old.
Yeah, but we did grow up in the 60s, Greg.
I know, but I don't. But I grew up with Frank Sinatra and my dad playing Saravan and my sisters playing Elvis. You know, so anything in the 40s, I really didn't grow up with.
Mm-hmm. Going to high school, this is, some people think it might be strange, but my high school had a jukebox in the cafeteria.
Oh, wow.
Strange.
Only California.
Yeah, only Redding. Or wait a minute, not Redding.
Red Bluff.
Red Bluff.
Where I'm living now, Larry, mm-hmm. Cowtown, USA.
Abilene?
No.
Wait, that's supposed to be Fort Worth's nickname, Cowtown.
Well, I'm trying to think of where the cattle drives ended, and they got on railroad cars to go to Chicago.
Well, we have one of the biggest bull sales in the United States here every January, late January, February.
I thought that was the teabagger convention,
yeah,
bull sales.
Either that or Washington. Yeah. You see, yeah.
And then we have the world's largest two-day rodeo, the Red Bluff Roundup.
The world's largest?
Well, it's been going on for 92 years.
They advertised it that way.
Yeah, 92 okay. years it's been in existence.
Oh, by the way, in the chat room, Sam in WV says, "Hi, Skype group."
Yeah, I think I had a listing for him at one time.
Where is Berkeley Springs, Bob?
Eastern Panhandle.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the area where folks live and like have a 2-hour train ride commute to D.C.
Okay.
Yeah, and by the way, Duncan, I saw where you found the website for the Appalachians. Did you ever find any way to watch it?
No, I looked all over and I couldn't find it. Just that little trailer.
PBS thing. Stuff is hard to find.
Mm-hmm. I went looking all over the place. Documentaries, and online, all kinds of things.
I'll bet a public library could probably lay hands on it.
Possibly.
Yes, Juanita.
I almost feel like the odd woman out, because when I
Oh. There is nothing odd about you.
Well, I wanted to talk about something that's kind of controversial, and since it's
thorn in the front purse.
Bill's on the phone. I guess I'll see what they think about it.
Absolutely.
When you were talking earlier about the crazy right winger that was in the Navy, Klingon
Schmidt.
Schmidt, and well,
I feel like I have to get the pine saw out every time I hear his name.
Oh yeah, but there is actually a somewhat of a war going on between radical feminists and transgender women. What is occurring is feminists believe that, you know, a lot of things that transgender women are doing are, in fact, things that feminists are trying to get women away from, which is, you know, the very shallow aspect of our culture, the beauty pageants, the the fashion industry, a lot of things that transgender women support are things that have hurt real women tremendously. As a matter of fact, gay men in general, well, I can't say in general, but they are very much into the entertainment industry. They are very much in the fashion industry, and they are very much in the business of perpetuating a lot of these stereotypes about women. And yet, if I as a woman call them on that, then I am seen as anti-gay. Now, for example, on television there is a show called, a series called Real Housewives of various states, as New
right.
Jersey, and well, okay, the fella is gay. That owns that franchise. Well, one of the housewives' husband during one of the shows used the F word to describe a man, and of course the owner of the franchise called him on it. And rightfully so. However, his whole enterprise, that whole thing is about portraying women in a most demeaning, superficial way. So feminists are taking a lot of heat from the trans women. They are really being hounded. They are being vilified. Some are like if one would want to come to West Virginia to speak, you may the word is put out to not let that person speak. And I mean, it's really quite ugly, and the attacks are just like the way males attack, which is vicious and about gender. Yet you say you are a woman. So I don't know. Do I want gays to have the rights? Yes.
Absolutely.
My nephew is gay, and I very much want him to be free, to walk the street, to feel safe. Do I want transgender people to be happy? Yes. But when it comes to, as a woman, I haven't been given the opportunity to define myself for myself. This is what feminism is about. Everyone has had the opportunity to define what a woman is. The way we dress is dictated to us, not by, you know, women, it's men. Everything about women is, if you look at the magazines in the store, is how to make him want out. It's all about, and all, I think it is unfair.
Well, it's, but that's also because sex sells, Juanita. I mean,
Of course sex sells.
I mean, if they had a focus group that said that Cosmopolitan's cover should feature articles on how to finish your own concrete basement floor, that's what it'd be there.
Of course. But that doesn't make it right. That doesn't make it
no,
right.
No, but right,
and,
but right.
And I don't think it's too much to ask. And a lot of this, of course, women will have to do.
But right and wrong, I guess my problem here, Juanita, is that right and wrong are not part of the equation where it's profit and loss, not right and wrong.
Exactly. I agree. However, it's becoming a very dangerous world for women and children. As I look at not only this issue, this sort of war that's going on with trans women and feminists, there are a lot of feminists who are opposed to porn. And I am one of those feminists. I'm not opposed to people having porn. I'm not trying to quash someone's free speech. All I want as a feminist is for it to, I think that it has went a step further. It's no longer about people having sex on a camera. I mean, you know, someone taking pictures. There's a new kind of porn called gonzo porn. And this is the kind of porn where women are spat on, women are triple penetrated with, you know, with, there's three men on a woman and, uh-huh, and there's, you know, a penis in her vagina, a penis in her rectum, and a penis in her mouth. I mean, there's porn where women are being beaten. This is the kind of stuff that I'm talking about.
Yeah, and this is the kind of stuff that that we should probably expect, Juanita, in a culture as otherwise depraved as ours is.
Well,
I mean, it's. I guess how can I put it better? And Skype group, jump in, please. Or Bill or.
One of my closest women friends in the Cleveland area was, God, she's got to be, if she's still around, she got to be 75, and she and another woman founded the Rape Crisis Shelter in Cleveland. And she educated the hell out of me as far as, you know, what feminism meant in her, at the place and time of the 60s and 70s and early 80s. And, basically what things mean is the right to, within reason, be who you want to be. As long as,
exactly,
you know, it's the old story that your freedom ends 2 inches from my nose and vice versa.
I don't think it's too much to ask for us, as men and women, to respect each other.
That
is
was the word
so
I was
hard
with
to do.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all it is. You know, keep your hands to yourself. And if you don't have something nice to say, just don't say it until you get home. I mean, I don't think that's too much to ask of a society. And the reason why the porn thing bothers me is because it's becoming mainstream. And you can see, for example, in music videos, they are very much like soft porn now. And a lot of my programming, it is very much based on soft porn imagery.
I wanted to ask Bob and Juanita and everybody in the chat room. It's Larry.
Yeah.
How are we going to define porn, and how do we define porn as healthy porn or erotica or derogatory porn like Larry Flint might have done, or like Hustler magazine, or whoever, the Bob Guccione or whatever, you know, penthouse and healthy porn. I mean, porn that can extol the positive virtues of physical relationships as opposed to the negative aspects where there's a lot of negative exploitation going on.
Well, that's where you get into trouble. And that's where you get into trouble, because it was Potter Stewart, Justice of the Supreme Court, who famously said, "I cannot tell you what obscenity is, but I know it when I see it." See, the problem, as the courts have defined it, is not a porn problem, but rather an obscenity problem. And they try to define obscenity as utterly lacking in any artistic, social, or cultural value.
You know, a friend of mine was going to school, acting school, on the West Coast, and she made money working the sex line, the phone. And she was talking to me many times about... She said, "Bill, you wouldn't want to hear some of these people. They're frightening." And because it's not the action, it's this sick tinge that it had to some of these people. I did very well by just letting my female friends be themselves and make up their own minds what they wanted to do, and I wasn't selling them anything. Selling somebody something is it's not what the whole thing was about.
No.
I would say that anything that causes physical injury to the a person's body should be, you know, to me, obscene, be rendered obscene if it causes physical harm. A lot of these women that are in the porn industry get things like gonorrhea of the eye, the throat. They have rectal prolapse where their rectums have collapsed. Vaginal trauma. Some of them have post-traumatic stress disorder. And I think mainly the feminists just want what they are asking for, and this is all they are asking for, is for the porn industry to be regulated like any other industry, and if someone is hurt, they can sue. That is all they are asking for, and I think that's pretty much not too much at this point, you know, to ask for. I, you know, would like to see more regulations, but I doubt it's so big and it's so prevalent and it's so mainstream and all
and the
corporations are making money.
Right, and one of the other problems that attaches to that is the old banned in Boston factor, Juanita. The more it is talked about, the more people are driven to it.
Well, I think in Sweden, they've realized, you know, prostitution is legal, but what they've realized that it's degrading to women. So they figure, well, we're not going to outlaw it. What we will do is educate our children, and you know, if we educate children about women and how to respect women, and not just women, how to respect men too. If we, you know, had more of an educational system that, you know, taught respect of women and that this is may not be a good thing to.
And do you, I mean, and by the way, who have I got on the other line there that I just brought on board? Hello?
You got me on one of.
Okay, hey Kevin. So it's Kevin, Bill, and Juanita on the phones. I'm just trying to keep track here. I've got a Juanita. I've got a story here from a couple of days ago that really gives us an idea of the nature of the problem as we face it. I'm sure you're familiar with the so-called men's rights movement.
Oh yes.
In which they conceptualize themselves as victims.
Yes.
And apparently this group is called A Voice for Men, and it is headed by this nasty person by the name of John Hembling. And he recently said, moral agency is a person's ability to make moral judgments and take action that comport with morality. A moral agent is a individual who is capable of acting with reference to right and wrong. With a small number of exceptions, Western women have collectively demonstrated themselves to be unequipped with a grasp of personal accountability, ethics, compassion, or empathy. And what I'm suggesting here is that the problem you are describing is larger even than the problem you're describing. It's beyond sex. It's beyond exploitation. It is pan-cultural. It's pandemically cultural. So this guy says he doesn't give an F about rape victims when they're women.
I saw that in and I used to work. I did some work for a rape hotline, and it's it's a horrible thing. And I had a relative who was many years ago when I was a child, right there in Beckley, who was raped and by several men and sodomized with a Coke bottle. And none of them were arrested at that time. And I never saw her sober from that point on. She pretty much drank herself to death.
It's called self-medicating.
And so it's only been, Bob, here in maybe the last 40 years that even, you know, rape has even been taken as serious as it is today, and it's still not. I mean, I think there's a rape of a woman in America every 1.3 minutes. So, it's a problem. And, I agree with the Swedes. I think it's education and men, which you're very good at, your audience is very good with, understanding women's issues. I don't think I've ever heard a male as deeply understanding of women's issues as you, Bob, other than, Professor Robert Jensen, who,
Well, I don't know that I have any particular insight, but I have a wife and daughters, and if you take that seriously, then you know.
Yeah, so that helps when you hear a fella that gets it, and when you hear a fella whose self-esteem is not based upon keeping women at a certain level in his life. That's good, because that's all it is. I think a lot of guys are afraid that somehow women are going to, I don't know, rise up and take over or somehow snatch their manhood away from them. I don't know what it is. But,
there's stuff here that runs very, very deep. You might even say genetically or evolutionarily. We had a conversation in this family the other night about how, because you know, we know that there are matriarchal societies, and we know that the first religions were probably fertility cults and Earth Mother type stuff. And you know, how was it that it got transformed into a patriarchy, because it's not logical.
The three religions. That's what did it.
Well, yeah, right, but it goes even deeper than that. I personally, just by way of example, there's a wonderful Mark Twain piece called The Diary of Adam and Eve, and Mr. Clemens was of course a genius, but there's a passage in there where Adam is completely flummoxed by the appearance of this new creature, Eve. And he continues to be baffled. He just pretty much lives in the dark, and every, you know, and every diary entry for Sunday says Sunday pulled through. And at one, so, you know, at one point he says, I was looking at the animals today, and she said, that's a tiger. And I said, why is that a tiger? She said, because that's what it is. And you know, just a lovely little example of the sort of disconnect, mixed in with probably a little bit of, no small amount of Victorian, sexism.
Right.
But he mentioned something about today she brought home some sort of bear cub. And it turns out it's a baby. She's had a baby. And he has no idea why. And there are people who speculate that men were kind of out of the loop on the whole reproduction process. I mean, that once they figured it out, that was where that transformative moment came. I mean, you can look in the book of Genesis, for instance, and you can see where the invisible friend in the sky takes over in the myth about Abram and Sarai, because up until that time, Sarai, I guess, was Sarah, was a priestess of sort to some sort of fertility goddess, and the fertility goddess gets overtaken by the invisible friend in the sky. So what I'm getting at is there are essential levels of disconnect that go way beyond anything that's happening in this culture at this time. By the way, a note just came in from Jeremy in Vermont. He says, regarding self-medication, he said, being who I am and understanding some of the issues that come with being transgendered, I completely get self-medication, and I truly get what Juanita is saying. So you've got some... Yes. And then this reminder coming from Ron and Raleigh. Ed Meese wanted to regulate porn. Gonzo porn came about in the 1980s. It was unscripted porn. A large number of early porn performers came from the theater and movie industry. Guys like Ron Jeremy have SAG cards. I guess my question would be, who gets to say what is erotica and what is unacceptable? And Ron says, I thought feminism was about each woman making their own choices, not a small cabal deciding what's okay for all women.
Well, that's the point. You know, a lot of these things like porn are not... this is men, again, telling women that this is empowerment. I mean, sort of like the Madonna factor. She perpetuates the sexism, but it's sold and has been repackaged as empowerment. Yet, in her videos... she is the one chained to a bed. In her books, sex, she is the one being raped in the Catholic girl's outfit. So it's the same old stuff, but it's been being repackaged. Now, if he can tell me, the person who sent you the email, how, you know, sticking a penis in a woman's rectum and then sticking it in her mouth is empowerment. I'd like to know.
I am not a censorious person, but I just kind of got to my TMI threshold, Juanita.
Well,
I mean, you know, but I mean, I'm not criticizing, but you know, I think we can.
Well, see, I think that you have to know what you're looking at. Those are not actors. That's real live stuff going on. It's real sex. You know, the woman is really being abused. And,
Well, what's interesting though is that there are people inside the porn industry, if I understand correctly, who are trying to make their industry more humane. There are women who are porn artists, I guess is the word, who try to make stuff that appeals to women.
Well, it's kind of the old tactic of what's going on with women as the same kind of tactic that's going on with African Americans. Now you get the African American to say the racist things the racists would do, and you get a woman to do the sexist things that men would do. I mean, it's you know, again, it comes back to giving women the opportunity to define womanhood and the way they want to be treated for themselves. And they've never been able to do that. I mean, there is some self-definition now, more than it used to be. But women have a long way to go before we achieve real, you know, self-definition. I mean, men do not allow women to define them. I mean, if I would tell you, you know, Bob Kincaid, in order for you to be a handsome man,
ain't never gonna happen.
I've seen you. You're very handsome. In order for you, no kidding, Bob. In order for you to be handsome, you have to be bone rail thin. You can't eat. I think you tell me where to go. Most men would. But women, you know, you can put this craziness out there where, you know, in order to be a model, you have to be almost 6 feet tall, yet weigh 120 pounds. It's ludicrous. But, you know, women are just bombarded and just...
Oh, believe me, I know. I mean, we don't even have to talk about porn per se to talk about, you know, again, I come back to the profit motive. There is, I think, such a thing as commercial abuse or profit-based abuse. I got in trouble with Agnes many years ago because our littlest wanted a Miley Cyrus t-shirt. So I took it off the rack and I said, see here where it says made in Bangladesh, baby? Let me tell you about Bangladesh. And, you know, we had this little teachable moment, which I have a hard time resisting. And I explained about, you know, 11-year-old children chained to tables sewing Miley Cyrus t-shirts in buildings that then collapsed, and about how Miley made some money off of it, and the clothing makes some money, company makes some money off of it, and Disney makes some money off of it, and the creepy big box store makes some money off of it. And then I with tears flowing down her face, I said, do you still want the Miley Cyrus t-shirt? Because I'll buy it for you. No, Daddy, no. And Agnes is looking at me going, yeah, there's got to be a better way to teach these lessons, Bob.
Well, she may be right, but you taught a lesson. And I'll just throw out the name's Triangle Shirtwaist Fire.
Sure.
And anybody want to look that one up?
Oh, yeah.
This stuff happened here.
Hey, could I do a this just in moment?
Absolutely.
The White House is not white tonight. It is pink. In honor of Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Yeah.
Did they light it up or did they paint it?
They lit it up.
Nice. Can you imagine that happening during the reign of Dim Leader?
I posted a picture from Twitter in the Skype chat.
I have my misgivings going way back about the whole Susan G. Komen search for the cure thing. But as some, you know, I am very fortunate. My mother had breast cancer when I was 10 years old. And back when I was 10 years old, there weren't just a whole lot of women who survived breast cancer.
Yeah, true.
And they did a radical mastectomy on her right side. And I mean, they took everything. I mean, they took the breast tissue, they took the muscle all the way down to the bone, and then went in and took all of her lymph out from under her right arm and down her right side. For the rest of her life, she never perspired on the right side of her torso. She was unable to. and then they radiated her. And ultimately, the cobalt radiation they used to make sure that she was clear of cancer is what wound up killing her, 25 years later. But 25 years of life versus dead tomorrow, that's not a debate that anybody's a bargain that anybody's going to debate. But it's
it's very
real to me for that reason, and I regret the fact that I have become such a horrible cynic, I suppose. In that I just question everybody and everything.
Well, I'm glad you do, Bob. I mean, somebody's got to do it, and most of the time, unfortunately, questions are needed, and the Susan G. Komen thing. It was just a very, very unfortunate thing. You know, it really was. And because I didn't realize that...
Well, there are so many hustles out there, for instance.
Would be so political.
I mean, do you know this alleged foundation that Sean Hannity fronts?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That turns out to be nothing more than a hustle for him to take plane rides and spend nights in nice motels.
Right.
Well, I mean...
But a lot of these charities, unfortunately, it's just become a way for some people to become wealthy. And it's even...
But it's not just them. I mean, I see it in what work I do, the activism I'm involved with. I wouldn't give a penny to the Sierra Club. Not a penny.
Yeah.
In fact, I probably wouldn't give to many big greens simply because I know that the money never rolls downhill to the grassroots people who are actually doing the work. I mean,
exactly.
I'm not kidding, for instance, when I say that the AIC campaign is in desperate straits. And here's a little core of affected people who got something done, who made history, who got the first bill ever introduced into Congress that would out and out end mountaintop removal. And the Sierra Club, nothing. Nothing.
Yeah.
And I'm so cynical that I think it's because they need hillbillies to keep dying. Because it's very good for them if you happen to be the person who is raking in $250,000 a year running that show, it's a nice racket. It's a great ride. And you've got to have, and it's a ride that you can only take on the backs of people who are being harmed.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah, Duncan.
Do you follow Michael Bruni or whatever his name is on Facebook?
Maybe. I'm not sure. I'm not very good at Facebook.
I don't bother with it.
Why?
Well, he seems to travel all over the country.
Oh, yeah.
Backing events now and everything else.
Yeah, and they made a big deal out of it. He comes from an activist civil disobedience background. He was at Rainforest Action Network, an organization I respect. When he was tapped to be the executive director of the Sierra Club, and one of the things he did was to get permission for Sierra Club people to get arrested, and then he promptly got himself arrested at a Keystone XL protest. But you know, can you see, Duncan, where I might be a little bit squishy about that?
Yeah, but I'm just saying, I harass him whenever I can on Facebook.
Good.
Just to make me feel good.
Yeah.
And I bring up the ACAC and mountaintop removal and.
Beautiful. We need more people doing that. In fact, we've got a member of the Horn family out in Arizona who is trying to work that angle. But it's deeply frustrating because it seems like, and I realize we've run far afield from your primary topic, in a way, Juanita, but I don't,
because I you know, I certainly don't want to, you know, dominate the conversation with that particular subject. I just wanted to throw it out there to see, you know, what your, you know, what your audience was thinking about it. I mean, these issues really don't get discussed the way they should, and of course in mainstream media, and that's why the horn is important, and because there is no place.
Yeah, and speaking of which, let me just mention that we're making steady progress. We're now only $15 away from making tonight's fundraising goal on this, our 8th anniversary. So thank you to Greg, and thank you to Lib for that help. It is much appreciated. But what
did you get my money from last week?
Yes, I checked in with Boss Man Wayne today.
Okay.
Yeah, he was happy to not to be met with an echo at the mailbox.
From the breaking news department, also, Gordon Klingenschmidt has once again made the news. I did check. Part of his district does encompass the northeast side of the Springs. But he today said that a transgendered female here in Colorado was raping the other girls visually because she was using the same restroom.
Oh, the potty fixation.
Yeah.
What is it with the potty fixation?
But I always wondered, raping someone visually, what is that supposed to mean?
I don't know. That's like viewscape pollution. I remember when a bunch of NIMBYs were pissing and moaning down in Greenbrier County, West Virginia, about a wind farm that they couldn't even see. And they said, oh, it's going to ruin our view shed, and we're going to be dealing with this god awful viewscape pollution. And a few of my friends said, well, why don't y'all just come on down here to the Coal River Valley and move right in? You won't have no viewscape problems at all. Of course, you'll be breathing toxic dust all day. Oh no, heaven forfend. But it's the same kind of visual. Oh my god.
I mean, I can show them some viewscape pollution. I'll show them homies in underwear and underwear and what are those things called? Tank tops eating Taco Bell. That's viewscape pollution.
Yeah, you got us off to a roaring start, Sergi.
Take a visit
to any
of these cheap department stores and walk around there for a half an hour, and you'll leave either laughing or losing lunch.
Ay, ay, ay.
I just hope to not be run over by some of the people in the little motorized carts in the grocery store. The electric carts.
Gangway!
Coming around the corner.
I will never forget being at, I had to go because the only place around here that had it was Walmart, the item I was looking for. And I was in there, walked onto the aisle. Right, and there was a woman bent over facing the entrance to the aisle where I was entering. Let's just say that the packaging or that the inside was too, or what was inside was too big for the packaging. that's why I hate going to Walmart.
Well, when you start yearning for the days of the Middle Ages with long monk's robes, you know, it's a thanks. Because I guess I'm too old. I sometimes think that going out, hell, when I was a young guy, man, I always wore socks, for God's sakes, you know. White with athletic, and athletic shoes. If anybody had told me when I was 13 and 56 that I would wear tennis shoes, I'd laugh at them. Give me those that's up, buddy. And give me those floor shines. Don't give me these damn cheap tennis shoes. This is for poor. It's like crew cut haircuts the poor kids used to get after the school let out, and they never got another haircut till school started again, you know. Things change. But again, yeah, I was in the business I was in, part of the business was women. It cost me my first marriage. And but the thing that I did was, young lady, you be who you want to be, and you can talk to me about how you feel, and how you feel is, I don't know, maybe being married to a psych nurse for 10 years, I heard it all, you know. It was just a matter of who somebody is who they are. That, again, that's a ripoff from the hippie movement of accepting people within mm-hmm. reason. Now, I have a hard time. My friend who did the phone work, when she talked about some of these people, I said, man, I would be turning these guys in as fast as I could. They're dangerous. One guy used to talk about he had his gasoline, he had his matches, and I'm not going to take it any further with what he did after performing sex. You know, you read about people like that in the paper. And see, that's one place where I've got no use for them. Like the guy...
And Jeremy's in a car.
The three women who were held captive on the west side of Cleveland that made the news for...
Yeah.
Yeah.
That guy would have a heart. You see how long he lasted in jail?
Yeah.
They said suicide, and I would not count on that, because a buddy of mine...
Yeah, he fell on his knife 32 times, right?
Yeah.
Just like Bob Yule.
Yeah.
Well, as it turns out, Ariel Castro, it wasn't suicide. He died from what they found out was autoerotic asphyxiation.
Well,
is how he died.
That might a good
came and went at the same time.
A good friend of mine lost a 13-year-old son that way, and man, he talked about when he called me, because I was his closest older guy that he could talk to about it, and that was a toughie, even for a guy.
Oh.
You know, I think I'm pretty. I've seen it all.
Oh, you know. one of the great parody moments in horn history, since it's the anniversary, has to be the lyric that I wrote and John Fox masterfully played and sang and produced when the story came out about the minister at the Southern Baptist megachurch in Montgomery, who was found dead. He was wearing two latex wetsuits.
Jesus Christ.
And he had certain marital aids in his mouth and elsewhere. And, yeah, autoerotic asphyxiation. And what was striking about it was that, again, this is a Southern Baptist minister in Montgomery, Alabama, and at the time, even the possession of such marital aids in the state of Alabama was a criminal act.
Oh, wow.
Two wetsuits? Getting in one of those things is difficult enough. Two?
And that's about all the detail we want from you, Sergi. Sergi,
here
it's
I am for years.
Yeah,
no,
so that email would be signed, Sergi, it's hard enough to get into one wetsuit, let alone two, Kyle, right?
Yep, pretty much.
Getting back to what Juanita was saying is that I found, you know, I was never a movie star, good-looking guy. Musically, yeah, I could... Guys told me that when I get that harp to shriek, their girlfriends would shudder. You know, I don't know whether they had bad ears or what. But all I had to do was just let a young woman be the person she wanted to be. And if she found me attractive, eventually she'd tell me. And, you know, and treat somebody with respect and you'll go, I don't care, male or female, you treat somebody with some kind of respect.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's the name of the game of human beings. That's in the simplest form.
When you mentioned the book Stiff earlier, I thought you were talking about, there was a book called Stiff by a woman named Susan Faludi. And it was about how males, it was a feminist who had wrote a book about how males have been tricked as well by the culture, and it's a pretty good book. It's quite thick,
way to put their hand in your pocket. In the simplest form.
Right.
Way to take that money out of your pocket is, I mean, come on, that's what runs the nation.
Of course. Well, I'm going to let someone else come on, Bob.
Can I change the conversation in a different direction?
Absolutely, Duncan. I think Juanita was saying tonight.
Thank you, Bob and Duncan and Bill and Cersei. Did I get them all?
And Jeremy and Larry and Jay Cruzen and Greg and Betsy and Thomas and Kevin. Yeah. Juanita, you have a wonderful evening.
All right.
Take care now.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay, Bob. Bill was mentioning about monks earlier.
Yeah, monks' robes.
Yeah, you remember that website I showed you last night for the winery?
Yes.
Just monastery winery. I was thinking about taking a ride down there and buying a couple bottles for you to auction off on the horn.
Oh, I saw that. That would be awesome. Of course, you're pulling together this whole awesome Northern California goods and goodies idea, aren't you?
Well, that's for the if you ever do the Kickstarter,
right? And like I said, that's in progress, and I've been a little bit remiss. I owe some information to the member of the Horn family who's helping out on this. But I think that when we get around to doing that, and you know, timing is everything. Don't you think that should be a central point of it? Given how much time we spend talking about the ravages imposed upon society by the coal industry. How cool would it be to every evening for John Fox's opener to say, and no mountains or mountain communities were harmed in the making of this broadcast?
Yeah, that's
well. But yeah, I bet the monastery's cool, and I bet the wine's even better.
Well, I forgot all about it. I drove by it years ago, but I never stopped in. And my cousins were up visiting, and they come up to see my dad, and they drove back to. They lived down in the foothills in the gold country east of Sacramento, and. They saw the sign or something, and they went down there. It's only like 20 miles away or less to drive down there.
Pick up a nice weekend bottles. Ride.
Yeah. I mean, and then so I just started kicking around. I'll repost the book. The website to you if you don't have it, and maybe you can put it up there and show people what it is or tweet it or
absolutely
whatever you want to do.
Cool. Yeah, we can do that. I think that would be really, really neat, Duncan. Thanks a lot.
Mm-hmm. It's unique.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of little vineyards like that up here.
Oh, this is the part where we torment Bob with stories of civilization.
Well, that's good wine country. How far are you from San Francisco?
I'm about 228 miles.
Okay. The reason it interests me is I listen to Frisco Radio, you know, KGO on Sundays, and the Bart stuff out there gets me because the guy that built it, the guy that started the thing, Roland, was the guy they fired in Cleveland who had headed the transit system and built the alleged rapid transit here. And they fired him because they caught him rigging the bidding on buses between GM and Flexible and Mack. He was leaning toward GM and getting paid for it. What a surprise.
Bill, if you were looking at a map, you'd go east from San Francisco on Interstate 80.
Yeah.
Then when you get to a little town called Vacaville, you take the 580, and then you hit. That takes you over to Interstate 5, and then you go north.
Yeah. I mean, I wish my friends were heading out there in the 60s, and I didn't have the courage to leave Cleveland. I stayed here and built a reputation and a name in my hometown, which Because my theory about music was like my dad's generation of guys. If you can make a living doing something you love, you're way ahead of the game. And the odds against making a lot of money were high, especially playing blues. But I was popular enough to draw good crowds for years and years. And hell, if you can make $300 to $500 a week, and the tax write-offs were plenty for self-employed people. So.
Speaking of Cleveland, I just saw posted a friend of this group, Kenny Pick, was saying that a lot of the new movie, Captain America movie, was filmed in Cleveland.
Yeah, they tied up their Memorial Shoreway, the biggest east-west right along the Lake Freeway, and a friend of mine came over to go out to dinner with me. He had to come the back roads, and he was cussing and swearing by the time he got here. But my sister was a big movie fan, and my uncle used to have a job back in the day of hauling movies from movie house to movie house after they'd take them off a first run and put them in neighborhood movies. That was ages ago. I think he worked with it. Edison helped him repair the truck. I don't know. But that's, so I went movies and me, you know. There's some great ones, but I was never a big movie guy. But anyway, yeah, that area, a couple of my friends, one of my guitar player buddies went out there, and he was loony as a fruitcake from the old-time religion type. Well, a little bit too much acid, and you start seeing Jesus, you know. He played with Pacific Gas and Electric, which was a popular band out of San Francisco in the 60s.
You mean Pacific Graft and Extortion?
Well, it was, yeah.
That's my power company.
Same name, yeah, exactly. You're right about them, too. I mean, don't even start me. I had to go around with the phone company that was just about, you would have read, some guy in Cleveland goes berserk and shoots the phone company guy, you know. That would have been me. But that's a beautiful area. I've got a friend in Alameda yet. And one who was out in San Jose for years.
Well, Larry, if he comes back, he lives in Berkeley.
Oh, yeah, another good boy. That, you mean the place where the security guard shoots you full of shoots you full of gas, huh? Yeah,
that was at UC Davis.
Oh, was it UC Davis? Okay.
Yeah.
And was did. Was that the guy that they were talking about? Got $38,000 in severance pay and disability.
Yeah.
Yes.
I believe so.
Yes.
That was another kick the furniture moment for me.
Yeah.
Well, you know, all these folks carrying guns. I started carrying in '80 and didn't quit carrying until the eyes went bad in 2001. And license? Are you shitting me? Not when you need a gun, you need a .38, go find one of your friends, an off-duty cop, you'll get it. Cheap. And to carry it, I was looking around to try to figure out, somebody gave me a shoulder holster, and I'm saying, how the hell do you wear this piece of crap? And to knock at the door, and standing outside my door was a buddy of mine who did 10 years in this slammer for armed robbery. This is like a movie out of a Mary Tyler Moore show. Just when they were saying something stupid, Ted Neider would appear, you know? Like that happens, you begin to wonder after a while. Like you said, Bob, did you conjure the guy up or what?
Right. And you said, and of course, that's one of my favorite comic moments in all of television, is the funeral of Chuckles the Clown.
Oh. Well, TV was... you should have seen the live TV in the early 50s when they supposed to shift to a commercial, and the camera would still be on the corpse, who would get up at that
point. Yeah, get up and take a hike, yeah.
Yeah. That was before tape, when it was kinescope, which was pretty bad film.
Remember all the hype on Breaking Bad, the TV show?
Yeah.
I never watched it.
A week or so ago, Albuquerque, they staged a funeral at a cemetery for Walter White.
Oh, I saw that, and they even published an obituary.
I wonder if some people have a life at all that's their own, you know, rather than what they see on TV or.
Yeah, but you know what? I gotta throw something out there. I don't watch a lot of television, but I do watch stuff online from time to time, and just on a lark, because I don't quite live the life of indolent leisure that you do, Duncan. You are, of course, the Horn's official man of leisure.
Right there too.
But
yeah, all I had to do was mow the lawn today.
You know, I got to tell you that after what Dunk's been through the last few years, he deserves some rest.
Hear. But what I was going to get at is, I sat down and started watching the BBC Sherlock series, and I haven't enjoyed television programming so much as I enjoyed that in a long time. That was. Anybody seen it?
No.
Apparently, they're getting ready to start season 3, and the first two seasons are, you know, you can view them on, like, you know, Amazon Prime, whatever. And I absolutely loved it. Just loved it.
Bob, most people know this on this call, but I haven't been following popular culture in a sustained fashion, except for maybe music, for 30 some odd years. So if I wanted to go, because I asked Duncan, I asked Lottie, and I asked various people what shows that I should check up on. If I wanted to get a sense of what's been happening in the culture over the last 30 years, what shows and what movies should I be checking out in order to get caught up? Because I really don't know what's been happening. I have no idea what's been happening.
That's a near impossible question to answer. Anybody want to jump in? Stand by. Let me bring another line on here. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, happy anniversary.
Hey, Mike Malloy.
Hey, Bob Kincaid.
Wow, thanks for the call. We got the whole gang sitting here too.
Happy anniversary to you. Happy anniversary to you. Happy anniversary, dear Bob Kincaid. Happy anniversary to you.
Well, as the official godfather of the Horn, which we designated you long ago.
Oh, my God, really?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Is that an Italian joke?
It can be if you need it to. I mean.
Hey, what was the question? What movies or books?
Yeah, Larry was asking what does he need to do to catch, you know, to sort of immerse himself in the popular culture?
Stop yourself.
Yeah, don't. Right.
Gosh, I don't know.
Don't watch 19 Kids and Counting.
Yeah, you
don't watch fiction.
I don't know where to start. I guess I would start with you mean modern, like today?
Just to get back into the flow of, you know, like get back into the flow of popular, you know, what's been happening in life. But, you know, ever since Reagan,
I've
kind of...
You know, my attitude about that is it changes with each succeeding generation. The generations are getting shorter now. They're about 16, 17 years. I've got a 9-year-old, and I have kids in their mid-40s, and I don't know what the mid-40 kids are experiencing. They're full-grown adults. They have their own children. I'm not sure what cultural influences they have. And I listen to my 9-year-old sometimes singing songs that she's picked up, I don't know, off her iPod or something. I have no idea. I just try to be here. So I wouldn't know, Bob. I have no idea. Do you?
No, I don't. I see stuff on social media. You got to watch this. You got to watch. Well, it's like Duncan brought up the issue of Breaking Bad, and
right.
that apparently completely captivated this nation. And I felt. I don't know. It's like this little house in the hills we've got is some sort of desert island, because I never watched a second of it, Mike.
No, I didn't either. And you know what Kathy did? We signed up for Netflix, and she has downloaded all 3 years, and she's been watching them one after another. And she tells me it's almost as good as Sopranos, and I have no idea. I've never seen. I saw the first two, and I thought what's all the big excitement about. But she says you have to get past the fourth or fifth installment, and then all of a sudden, kaboom. But I haven't watched that either, and I feel like I'm the only person in America that hasn't. I'm glad there's two of us.
Well, there are, I have no tolerance. I think my tolerance is gone now, Mike.
I think mine is too.
Between the ads and the I can't stand the celebrity culture.
Oh my God! Don't get me started on that.
And I'm sure your inbox probably looks a lot like mine. I get these pitches for me to do interviews with people who want to talk about is Miley Cyrus bad for America?
Oh, I know. I get those from agencies in New York or Chicago or L.A. And of course, I immediately delete them. It's like, no thanks. I really don't want to do that ever.
No, because then you feel like you're your history in radio is long and storied. And so you know what I mean when I say it sort of gives you that icky feeling of being a member of the morning zoo crew.
Yes, absolutely.
And one of the common threads, in fact, I just had an email from Jack down in Shreveport who said, I found the horn because of Mike. And the many kind things that you've said about this little effort over the years, and there's a whole lot of overlap between the Horn Family Commune and the Truth Seeker Collective.
Yeah, the commune and the collective. Oh my God, I love it.
Right. Yeah, we're gonna sell incense real soon.
right. Incense is the way to go. Absolutely. Oh my God.
So I got to ask you, are you gonna do the DC gig in January again?
No. I got the email from Candy, and. I just said, look, every time I go to do that, because of our equipment, it's always a screw-up. I always have to go to Bob Kincaid to bail my ass out, or I have to go to Sam's Peter, help. And I'm just tired of it. That's A. B, when we will have making the transition from all audio streaming to audio-video streaming, and that whole thing that we put together as a result of Kickstarter, we've only ordered the equipment now. There's a process you have to go through.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. So I don't think I'm going to be there. And, of course, Candy said, oh, I said, look, Bob Kincaid will be there. Sam Cedar will be there. You'll have enough good guys there. I just can't make it this year. So.
Well, the only downside to that is we don't get to make our pilgrimage to the Vietnamese pho joint in Chinatown.
That's true. That's some of the best damn food I've ever had in my life.
And cheap for DC. Cheap.
Oh my God. Bob Kincaid took us all. There was about eight of us. Took us to this restaurant in DC's Chinatown. We had to ride to take the metro or the subway, whatever they call it. And it was the best Asian food I've ever had anywhere at any time in my entire life. And Atlanta has great Asian food, but man, that was good. Oh my God, that was good.
And there's another place around the corner where they've got the already roasted duck for Peking duck just hanging in the window.
That's a little scary for me.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you got to take your chances in life. Mike, you're almost on top of showtime. Take just a couple of minutes and tell folks what to expect with the transition coming and the video and all of that.
It's just I don't know. I've got real mixed emotions. About it. We want to do it, obviously, or we wouldn't have done the Kickstarter thing, but now all of a sudden, like a slob, like who? I sweat, so I can't come unshaved, and my hair's all over the place. I've got to groom myself now. We've got to clean up the studio, but what it's going to be is just the same thing we're doing now, except it'll be audio and video, and the plan is to have about three cameras. Kathy's going to run a switcher. We're going to switch to Mac equipment instead of these damned Windows.
God save, I hope you don't have Windows 8.
Kathy does. That's part of what the problem has been. I've got Windows 7. She's got Windows 8, and it's been driving her crazy. Now, I think they sent out some kind of a program to try to correct all the problems. But anyway, it'll be a video, and we hope it's going to be entertaining. I might go so far as to occasionally... even, God help me, have a guest in here, because, there are a lot of radio people who live in Atlanta, as you well know.
Oh, yeah.
might do that sometime just for the hell of it. But it'll be essentially what we've been doing, but it'll be visual. And you know how video always adds a lot. It does for me anyway. I love radio, but I also like radio with pictures. So that's kind of the plan. It's we're not going to tear down the house and build a studio with a house around it. I mean, it's going to be essentially the same studio with some upgrades, but it's the equipment, as you know, that costs a damn much money. I wouldn't have a delay system had you not given me one all those years ago when we switched over from working in a studio, working for Air America. But we needed one when I went to work for Nova M for Shelley and Anita Drobny. And we couldn't take calls until Bob Kincaid gave us a delay system so that nobody could come on and say, well, you mother... You know.
Right. And oddly enough, this being internet only, you can say those. And that was part of the motivation behind that. It was just gathering dust here because
right.
we had reached the rather unescapable conclusion that, no, there was not going to be any terrestrial radio in our future.
Well, I believe that that's true with everybody's future who's going to do a programming, what you and I... people who consider radio programming. Look, it's all switching to after, I think, 15, the automakers are going to, for vehicles with radios whatsoever. What they'll have are ports where you can plug in your own stuff, because who in the hell wants them? You can come up with your own programming.
I've got a long drive coming tomorrow of about 6 hours, and I know that if I turn on the radio, it's going it's a wasteland now, Mike.
It is. At the time, they've had programming from us for 13 years, but the only benefit I've ever gotten from Sirius satellite radio now is Sirius in our two vehicles. So when we take a trip, if I'm just driving around town, I don't listen to AM or FM radio unless it's the PBS station here, WABE. I will listen to them sometimes, not now because they're in their pledge drive. Right? It just makes me just want to rip my eyes out listening to that, because those people don't know how to talk on the air. They really don't. All they know how to do is be very quiet and play classical music. But I will listen to Sirius satellite radio constantly, because I don't have to listen to any opinion, a newscast, nothing. And I almost get my sanity back.
Almost.
Almost, not quite. Yeah, I got to go. Hey, listen.
Mike, have a great evening. Break a leg tonight. Thanks, kind wishes.
No, of course I would never remember it, but I have people like Kate in the Desert and Jude and all kinds of folks who send me an email 2 or 3 days ahead. You know it's Bob's 8th anniversary. You know it's Bob's 7th anniversary. You know, and I go, oh, of course I know. I planned on calling him.
Absolutely. Well, say hi to Kathy for us, and from the tribe here, say hi to Malloy. Molly. I'm sorry.
I'll do it.
Say hi to Molly, because Ferg and Marg and Doodle ask about her constantly.
Yeah, I will. What a greatest kids in the world.
All right. Take care.
All right, man. Take it easy.
Thanks, Mike.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks, Mike.
Bob. Hey, Bob.
Well, isn't that cool?
Yeah, it really is cool.
Ask him if he went. Where did he go to school? Tennessee or Toledo? Or Bowling Green?
Toledo, I think.
Yeah, Toledo.
Okay.
Yeah, I think he went to high school there, and then he went to various schools.
Yeah, I think he went to North Carolina State for a while.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I don't remember if he's older than I am or not. I'll be 71 on January 1st.
I'm not entirely sure.
I think you're about
close to the same age.
Hello?
I dig it. You know, between you and him, you guys fire me up pretty good.
I just brought another caller on. Who have I got?
Hello. How you doing, Bob?
Hey, Jim.
Hey, Bob. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you, Kevin.
Hey, while I had a chance, Mike had mentioned Jude, and I just want to say hello to Jude. I did get the email back from her, so I want to thank you for making that connection.
Well, that's interesting you would mention that, because I just had a note from Jude saying, years ago while living in Seattle, a time when there was liberal radio, I used to listen to John Elliott out of San Diego. Each Friday he'd have a group of three fellows on who'd engage in such excellent dialogue, each respectful of the other with very timely conversation relative to current events. Jude says, I so enjoy listening to this new format, the front porch format, and those who participate. Change, Jude says, is the groundwork of growth. Celebrating family, especially today, she says.
Bob,
I wanted to ask you a question before we go. What I wanted to ask Mike and you both before I was sent off for a little while was I downloaded a copy of Political Chronology. And that's a tough book. And that was one of the books that Mike suggested that people read in order to understand some of the political chicanery that's been going on. Have you seen that, and do you suggest anything as a lead-in for that? Because that's a rather difficult book.
You're fighting way above my weight, Larry. That's beyond me, that one is.
Okay, hey, Larry, I want to apologize for sending you off, but that was the whole Malloy chat room was on his case last night to call Bob too.
Yeah. you guys are just awesome. You really are, because you know Mike's a hero of mine. This is like I've said before, and maybe this is an appropriate time. I started listening to Mike when I was a little baby editor and weekend news anchor at CNN Radio in Atlanta. And I'd get off at 10 o'clock at night, and Mike would have come on WSB AM 750, the blowtorch of the South, at 9. And I'd listen to Mike on the way home and just sit there, you know, terrestrial radio, and laugh and carry on. And kind of like what he was saying about not having seen Breaking Bad, felt like I was not quite so alone in the universe, because, I mean, this was 1987. Iran-Contra was out there. And here's Mike Malloy on public airwaves in Georgia calling Ronald Reagan a vile, hate-filled pus
rat bastard,
pus bag of murder of murderous intent. And I was like, yes.
Well, I like that greasy-haired old guy line, Bob.
Well, you know, and there's another one we've got for him. When I was a kid, we had a Yorkshire Terrier, and his name was Nicholas, and he lived to be 16 or 17 years old. He was a wonderful dog. And he had a squeaky toy that was Ronald Reagan's head. And, you know, and my father would look at him, and Nicholas would go and hide his Ronald Reagan and just, you know how terriers are.
Oh, yeah.
And Dad would look at him and say, Nicholas, where's that empty-headed old greasy Republican president? And Nicholas would look at Dad and cock his head and walk over to where he had it, wherever he had it hidden, and bring it to him, and they'd sit there and play catch with it for a while.
And they love that.
Yeah. So I mean, it's one of the things I'm kind of proud of. I'm not one of these people who used to be a conservative, but I saw the light. No. I've pretty much been this way all along, and I'm this way because I had parents who were this way.
Mm-hmm. In my 20s, I dealt with John Birch Society people. I got a nose full of lint. Didn't like them then. When you grow up, you know, in a housing project, you don't buy into the capitalist game. I learned too much too young.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Bob.
See you, Greg.
Night, Greg.
See you, Greg.
Later, Duncan.
Hey, thanks for coming by, Greg.
I got it.
Yep.
Happy anniversary, Bob.
Thanks so much.
Sure, man. Hang in there.
Gonna try. Eight down, another one to go.
I was doing the, looking up that Klingenschmitt quote.
Yeah.
And I was also looking at the House District 15, and they were giving background on it. Turns out, Douglas Bruce used to be a House District 15. And if you're not familiar with Doug Bruce, he's the one that created the taxpayers' quote-unquote Bill of Rights. He's one of the
Oh God! Guys. So it's a hotbed of teabaggery, is it?
Right, exactly. And Bruce ended up doing about 6 months in jail here recently. Evasion or something like that.
Well, I have a feeling it won't be long before Chappie Klingenschmidt gets caught trolling for rent boys in the Walmart parking lot somewhere.
Oh, we can only hope.
I'll never forget when that exact thing happened to the, I think he was the vice president of the Oklahoma Southern Baptist Convention. And he was in his Mercedes, trolling for boys to have sex with, and said, "Well, I'm just a witnessing to them."
You're kidding.
It's some kind of witnessing, right? Yeah. Right.
Really? Oh, wow. They're hypocrites all over the place, aren't they, Bob?
Oh, yes. If they're right wing, they're hypocrites.
Okay.
Oh, I think last night when you said something about Christians are automatically liars or whatever, and then Klingenschmidt with that quote he did that you played last night just automatically proved it. You know, it was like,
well, you know, we've got an old hillbilly. You know, we say it in hillbilly thusly: the truth ain't in him.
No.
Well, you also know why his eyes are probably brown. You know.
Exactly. Hey guys, it's been a wonderful evening. I wish I was going to be here tomorrow, but this is a family obligation and no getting around it. So thanks for Duncan. Thanks for pulling together a thorn in the Thursday front porch, whatever we're calling it.
And hopefully you send up the bat signal.
Exactly. And
happy anniversary, Bob.
Thank you, Larry.
Didn't get a chance to say it.
So maybe I'll be home on a Friday soon. And we'll get to do a real Friday on the front porch. But I appreciate everybody chiming in, and thanks for all the kind wishes. And you guys have a great, everybody have a great weekend. On the phone lines, thanks to Bill and Jim and Kevin. Thanks to Betsy and Thomas and Jay Cruzen and Duncan and Sergi and Larry and Jeremy and Greg, even though he's already gone. This is just a hell of a lot of fun. It really is. And thanks to Juanita for calling in, too. That makes it it makes it all very special. So be well, and we will talk soon.
Okay.
All right.
And Jim,
have a good weekend, y'all.
Animals, man. You're right.
Travel safe, Bob.
All right. Yeah. Thanks, guys.
You be careful tomorrow, man.
I'm going to.
All right, buddy.
All right. Bye now. And I'm happy to say thanks to help breaking late from Jack. And from, I mentioned earlier, Lib, and thanks to Betsy late last night. We're pretty close to even for the week, and that's awesome. It is time to get out of here. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Cold River Mountain Watch. And here on this 8th anniversary, it is especially necessary to remember that none of this ever would have happened without Gina. So thank you, Gina. And we'll talk soon. 8 years down, here comes the next one. Here comes Rick Smith on the horn.